Welcome to the Wealth Building Made Simple podcast with Philip Washington Jr. Today's episode is brought to you by StonehillWealthManagement.com. Today, Philip talks about the age of trillionaires. Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. And now, here's Philip.
We are back with another episode of Wealth Building Made Simple, brought to you by Stonehill Wealth Management, my wealth management company where we help people invest for the future, provide capital to bring the ideas and preferences to life that we want today, and create the world that we want to live in. Also brought to you by WealthBuildingMadeSimple.us, my newsletter where I write my updated thoughts weekly around what's going on in the economy, tech, and emotional intelligence. So today we are talking about the age of trillionaires because, you know, this is not coming from a perfect memory, but I feel like the first $1 trillion company was Apple. I feel like Apple was first to a trillion. And then we have, you know, Microsoft. I feel like maybe Facebook touched it and then came back down or was pretty close to it. Now we got Berkshire Hathaway pretty close to a trillion. And so I was like, oh yeah, this makes complete sense, right? We're about to move into the age of trillion-dollar corporations and trillionaires. And so I did research and I was like, huh, when was the first billion-dollar corporation? And it was in 1901, U.S. Steel. By the way, I'm going to give the overview of this story, but this is like one of the most amazing stories of how J.P. Morgan bought out Andrew Carnegie and merged it with other steel conglomerates to become the billion-dollar corporation. So I've heard the story multiple times. My favorite one is in the book Think and Grow Rich, tells the story as well. But yeah, basically just summarize it. It was the first billion-dollar corporation. The first billionaire recorded was John D. Rockefeller around 1915, 1916. And so when you look at what those $2 billion corporations represent and billionaire represent was in the infrastructure for the 1900s, the Industrial Revolution and Industrial Age in the United States was steel and energy, right? Steel and energy was critical to building the infrastructure necessary to build out all the rest of the economy that allowed the U.S. to prosper in the 1900s, right? And so that's important when we think about like the current reference for today, but I'm going to stay in 1900 for a little bit and talk about the U.S. industrial economy was the benefactor for the wave of inflation that came through Europe. So I'm going to connect these points, but at the same time, what was happening in Europe, which Europe in the 1800s was like the beginning of the industrial revolution, right? And a couple hundred, you know, that the 1700 time period when France had a lot of, you know, money and power, that's when millionaires were, you know, with a lot of money in the 1800s, 1700s time period. But the 1800s or the end of 1800s was a time where debt was run up in Europe and the U.S. didn't have a lot of debt. And whenever you have lots of debt, then you can call debt in the financial system the equivalent of like a body breaking down because of stress in old age, right? And so the life and death cycle of money is, you know, life goes from old age, stressful situations to less stressful situations. And so money flowed to America because America had, you know, new ideas, new preferences, not a lot of debt. And so the money flowed to America. But what also happened is when countries have lots of debt, the solution since the beginning of, I study lots of periods, lots of countries, is boils down to like in debt-based systems, right? We're just going to create more money and add more debt. And they do their best when they, so like the way they did it in the 1800s was lots of war, right? They would print more money and go to war. Before they could print money, they would shave off coins, and I don't want to go into that detailed process, but let's just call it money printing, right? They would money print and then go to war and try to take resources. But when they money print it, it creates more perceived money. But those who understand, those who are closest to the printing press, who are financially and typically financially astute, they understood that all this debt and all this money printing means a dying system. And so they reshuffled their money to a new system with less debt, which is how you ended up with a lot of money in the U.S. And so the bigger picture, so you don't really nerd out on all this kind of stuff, because I'm wanting to make a parallel analogy, is like, just like you learn in physics, energy never dies. It just changes forms and it's always expanding from our perspective. Same with real money and wealth, right? Which I call wealth in my mind, productivity, which is really sort of just saying like preferences, right? If you think of productivity, preferences, and wealth as the same thing, I think you'll be accurate in what the term really means across contexts, and it'll make making money easier as I lay the foundation. So for now, just make it synonymous: wealth, productivity, and preferences, right? And going back to what I was saying, because in reality, the amount of money and wealth is actually not ever really changing, right? We always have plenty. What happens, we just use financial systems that measure these cycles, and it appears that money is being created or deleted when it's not. I'll use a out-of-the-domain example of like water, right? The total amount of water on Earth stays relatively constant over time due to like water cycles, right? Water moves between reserves like oceans, rivers, lakes, and the atmosphere. So it appears the water levels are changing in certain locations, but the total amount of water stays relative, right? Time, so money is like time, right? Time is just the reference point to measure change. That's really the purpose of time, or when we invented clocks in time, was just to measure change, right? Money, the true purpose of money is just the reference point to measure changes in values for decision making. So for example, right? If we have, there's lots of reasons for money, but in this context, right, to measure for decision making, if money is constant like water, right, and then all the goods and services that we need to have our preferences met are static, right? If eggs go up relative to the unit of money or currency we use, then it goes up to a price that we don't really like, then automatically, without some bureaucrat in the middle, we might replace eggs in the morning with bacon, right? Like money, if it were not manipulated, would just give us a price signal to allow us to make decisions on our own about what we're going to do. Cultures before we had nerd math, and I'll explain what nerd math means in a second, but cultures who were in harmony and still are in harmony with nature, meaning like they don't try to control nature, they like flow with nature, they would just follow the water instead of attempting to manipulate the water through what I call like nerd math, right? So nerd math are, things that humans do to try and manipulate nature, right? Or said a different way, they believe they say, all right, we're going to put the things in place because we think we know more than all, right? And when I say all, I'm calling what people call God, the market, all, right? The collective consciousness that, you know, keeps everything in motion, like literally and spiritually. That's a whole conversation. But like I'm just saying, nerd math is there's a small group of people that always think they know better than all. So they say, oh, man, the water shouldn't flow this way. The way that it actually should flow, if I design the world, it should flow this way. And nerd math always proves to be wrong because, like, there's a higher power that keeps the Earth spinning in its orbit, and we haven't figured that out yet. And so, like, it always wins over time. And so, but in the temporary place, in the short term, right? If the nerds, right? And I'm saying I'm on purpose using this thing because I've considered my, you know, I don't mean nerd as smart. I mean, again, nerd is somebody who thinks they know more than the market, right? So those who believe in the nerd math, right? So you got the nerds that say, hey, we're super smart. We know more than everything. Here's our rules. Here's our system. And to the extent they can convince people that their system is the authority, right, smarter than the market, right, then those who believe in a system become enslaved in the system, right? And so that's how you get a system where we get these rat races, or you use, going back to the water example, if the nerds say, all right, for this region, we can control the flow of water, well, guess who's never going to run out of water, right? The nerds and those who are close to the nerds, right? Because when you try and manipulate the flow, you're going to create scarcity. And whenever you create scarcity, then you're going to have to be close to the people in power to make sure that you have water when their nerd math goes counter to the way things naturally should move, right? Meaning everybody should have just moved with the water. You know what I mean? But the nerds convinced everybody that, no, this pocket of land is what we're going to do. We're going to have enough water. And I'm going, but you're going against, like, you're going against millions of years of cycles and the way things work. So this just, your nerd math can't work. But it takes a while for people to, like, break free of the nerd's control and stop believing it and kind of move with the path of water. But if you believe the nerds, you're there. And so you're going to be succumbed to the nerd math of being enslaved in it. Here's how this relates to money, right? Those who are in power, it is just going to be natural for them to guide the perspectives to perspectives that protect their wealth, right? It's not a good or a bad thing. I'm just saying you got to understand what it is, because here's the reality. All across the world, right, we have entire economies built on tons of debt. And if there was not money printed with, whether it be artificial low rates or money printing, if there was not money printing, then the values of everything would collapse to a level where it would bankrupt a lot of people. It would make a lot of asset values not worth less because, right, banks lend on asset values. And so it becomes the trickling effect. There'll be lots of layoffs. And so going back to my water analogy, it's like if you build a town around an unnatural water source and the water flowed upstream and you didn't go with it, right, when nature calls their note and says, hey, you should have went upstream, well, everybody in that town that were progressively getting poor and you had a concentration of wealth because those that were closest to power had all the water they needed and they rationed everything off. So there's going to be a calling where, like, you got to call, like, the natural forces are going to work itself out. What I'm saying is the only way to keep the system going in that town that didn't flow with the water is to continue to, like, manipulate the water supply, right? So, like, this is going to, I'm talking about money supply, right? So they have to continue to print money to keep the system going, because if they didn't, it will crumble, right? And it'll either force people to move upstream where the water is, and or people will become hopeless and fight over the scraps. And that's, you know, that actually happens, right? And we got free will to do what we want to do. But what I'm saying is, this is sort of where everything in the world is for those who are looking at systems. So if you understand what I just said, but you look at the system, you might see, you're seeing these numbers in the millions, trillions, billions, and you might think, yeah, like all this money that they're creating is like real money. I was like, ah, no, it's nerd math. You know what I'm saying? Like, meaning, like, said a different way. There's this debate. There's this debate between who was richer, Mansa Musa, you know, which is a very wealthy African or Muslim African descent king, Solomon, John D. Rockefeller, Elon Musk. Who was wealthier? Right. If you look at this pure numbers, right, you might say the recent person, right? Because, but it's all about like relative wealth, meaning like Elon Musk can buy the same thing that had the same influence that John D. had, which had the same influence that Mansa Musa has, that had the same influence that King Solomon has. So it's across time periods, they were all the richest richest people were all relatively the same wealth. The nerd math is different because of the time period, right? But in relative wealth terms, they were all doing things to bring forth an economy that met the preferences of the people, which attracted relatively large amounts of wealth, right? So, like, if you ignore the nerd math and you say, okay, like the wise older generation always says there's nothing new under the sun, right? That's actually a Bible verse too. There's nothing new. It's just different actors in different time periods doing the same play, and it looks different, right? And so since we use nerd math to communicate value in the world, it looks like a trillion is a lot of money. And here's my point in saying this. It looks like a trillion is a lot of money. But a $20 trillion company is not that big of a deal, right? To think about Apple or Bitcoin being worth $20 trillion or Facebook being worth $20 trillion, like that's not as big of a number as you think because like we operate on nerd math. You know what I mean? Like the world's changing. The nerds that run the world are going to do what they're going to do, right? Which is print more money. And the money is going to find itself to the things that are bringing in the preferences of this current generation, which is means number go up for those things. And so that's really important in the current context because the natural thing that you would have thought to do in the early 1900s is say, what? A billion-dollar corporation? This is crazy. Standard Oil is overvalued, right? But you would have made money on Standard Oil and its kids, which are like Exxon and Mobil and a bunch of other companies, for like a long time, right? And then all the spinoffs, industries and areas that came out, and like there are billionaire oil men and women today, right? That were worth multi-billion dollars. And so it causes you to rethink, right, your upside and say, because I'm engaging in conversations with some people that say, oh man, Philip, I feel like I missed out on investing in, you know, Amazon, or I missed out on investing in Bitcoin, or I missed out on investing in Facebook, or I missed out in, and I'm like, no, because we're building a new economy and it's a long runway to build out the preferences that people want. So for example, the world is now aware of a driverless car, right? When the world became aware of automobiles versus horse and buggies, you know, like what happened? Like we... You know what I mean? Like we had a long time of making money in automobiles versus horse and buggies. And so you have a long runway, right? You have a lot of time to make money on autonomous driving and everything that spawns from that economy, right? So Tesla being worth $20, $30, $40 trillion, that's nothing, right? Because the nerd math is going to require those that run the world to print lots of money and make it appear like it's worth $40 trillion, but it's just, it's going to be the most relative value companies on the planet, right? And so you, what else, right? You have people are now aware of a financial system that you can place your wealth on and it can't be manipulated by centralized authorities, Bitcoin, right? As now, it's just a matter of like more and more people becoming aware of a place to store some of their money, right? Not, I mean, we're still going to use dollars, right? But some of the money, the part of their money that they want to not be depreciated, right, over the next 10, 20, 30 years as these governments have to do their nerd math to keep the current system in force, right? Move it over here, right? Again, Facebook, which is like a media company for everybody. You know, X is private now, but even though it's private, it's going to be worth a lot of money, right? From if they keep doing what they're doing. You know, Amazon still creating opportunity for us to, for people to have mom and pop shops selling stuff on the internet. Shopify. I mean, I can go through the list of all the different companies. And so like, it's changing your perspective of the numbers, right? Ignore the numbers and focus on like value to society, because here's what you won't change, right? You can go, and I liked, and I use the Bible a lot, not again, because I'm trying to be over religious. I like to use the Bible because we live in a Christian-based society, and I like to use history, and the Bible has a lot of history around like money. And so it's just easier to draw the parallels. But they talked a lot about money changers, right? And the mind of Caesar in the Bible. Well, the mind of Caesar is just an analogy, or Caesar is more like a mindset that wants to control things, right? It's the nerd who creates the nerd math for society. You know what I mean? So the mind of Caesar is the one that says, hey, we're going to build a city right here and go against the stream, go against the current, right? And fade nature. Because I'm smarter than nature, right? So that's the mind of Caesar, right? And the mind of Caesar has, once the mind of Caesar tries to control nature, it has to, as nature goes against it, it has to tighten its grip of control, right? It has to take more money in taxes. It has to have more wars. It has to print more money, right? And we're always going to have a Caesar, right? We're always going to have nerds that think they know more than everybody. And that's not a problem. Like, let them, Jesus said, let Caesar have what's Caesar, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, once you understand how Caesar thinks and you understand how everything works, Caesar's not a problem. Like, pay Caesar his taxes, right? Let Caesar inflate the money, right? Let Caesar do what it's going to do, right? Because, like, you're never going to kill Caesar. There's going to be a Caesar 100 years from now, 200 years from now, a million years. Caesar is just the main character in the play that we live in. So, like, let Caesar do what it's going to do. And you're all, and then it talks about money changers, right? Like, money changers is a method that Caesar uses to change the money, right? To make the appearance of abundant water, right? Look the way it is. Cool. Like, that's going to be a staple in every society because it's a tool that Caesar uses to keep Caesar's system in place. I don't judge it. I understand the perspective, and I just say, cool. What I can do is just follow the flow of water. Just know, hey, there's always an abundance of water. There's always plenty of water to cure everybody's thirst around the planet. There's always plenty of food, right, to cure everybody's thirst around the world, right? There's always plenty of land, right? There's always plenty of everything on the earth to meet all of our needs. You only get scarcity when people believe in nerd math, right? Like meaning like if you're in an area and there's no more buffalo and you like to eat buffalo, right? Either follow where the buffalo went or eat something new in the area. You know what I mean? That costs less. And so this is how I look at building wealth is, you know, some people's goal is to let me run from Caesar. Let me go from America to over here. Well, you're going to have a Caesar over there too, right? You're going to have a seizure wherever you can't escape seizure, because seizure is a mindset, not a physical person, right? And wherever you have people and we have free will, there's going to have people that think they control things and people that just go with the flow, right? And like, you know, and both are good, right? To present, I like diversity and options and opinions, and I like feedback loops, and I like to, you know, I need to, you know, you need the people that to play their role in the play, right? If there was not, you know what I'm saying? Like you need the drama of life to make drama to like life interesting, right? Like I love the fact that the mind of Caesar tries to control things, because it creates information and noise for me to know where to not put my money and know where to put my money, right? When I see Caesar acting up, cool. Let me go with the flow, you know, let me follow where the money's going. And what happens over time is as people wake up from the system and they see, oh, wait, let me just follow the flow. Then I'm already upstream, have built my town, right? Or in real terms, I own Tesla stock, I own Bitcoin, I own, you know, Zoom, I own Roblox, I own Bitcoin miners, I own all these things that are upstream at the towns and with the people that went with the flow of the water. And then you come and say, welcome, there's plenty for all of us here, right? And then they, right? And then we make money. And then when the water flows further up, then I move to the next town and the next town. I'm a ongoing nomad, not ever getting attached to a specific closed-ended idea, because I know, like, there's always plenty of water, it's always cycling, and I'm just going to follow the flow of the money, right? And so, like, the age of the trillionaire is a thing. Companies are going to be worth trillions of dollars. I am pretty confident I'm going to live to see the next trillionaire, and I don't think I'm going to be an old man, right, when it happens, even though I'm coming up, you know, like I got lots of grades, but I don't think I'm going to be an old man, right, when I see it. So hope this helps. I hope it blows the perspective of your mind up of saying, oh, $1 trillion is a lot of money. It's not a lot of money, right? Just think in relative terms, right? LeBron's not better than Jordan, right? They both were dominant players in their time, right? Jordan's not better than LeBron, right? Music in the 60s is not better than music today, right? It's, you know, I can go on and on and on, but just respect the preferences of the time period, right? Roll with the preferences, let go of your biases, and the amount of money that you could make at any time period is going to be like astronomical. Hope this helps. Until next week, enjoy yourself.
Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.